Hey, it's Millie, and welcome to the Generalist World podcast. This is a show where I interview people from the Generalist World community, and we talk things like the future of work, careers, predictions, their hot takes, and really understand what their squealy careers have looked like. So if you're a generalist who feels like they're living in a specialized world, this is the podcast for you.
Today, I am so excited to have longtime GWer and fantastic human being in the room with us today. His name is Peter. How are you going today, Peter?
Doing really well. I'm in Round Rock, Texas, so it's just north of Austin, and it finally has gotten a little bit chilly here, so it's my kind of weather, so I'm finally in my element temperature-wise, so I'm feeling really good.
Fantastic. And for folks who don't know you, maybe they're coming across you for the first time and, you know, they're contemplating, will I spend the next 30 minutes tuning into this episode? What might you tell them about who you are and potentially some of the things we might be covering today?
Sure. Yeah. If you go on LinkedIn, my official job title is a senior technical support specialist, but I think the simplest way to kind of capture all the things that I do and the way that I say it, I'd say it now, is that I design systems that let people tell the truth about how they actually work without paying for it later. And so my first lessons kind of came off of the floor of like restaurants and retail and learning that systems there in those elements aren't abstract. They're very real and lived in the hustle and the bustle of what you're doing day to day. And so you can really feel when a process doesn't support you. And so that's a lot of where I kind of cut my teeth in my early stages of my career. And so I like to design things that come from an element of self-loyalty. And if a system requires you to abandon parts of yourself, then that system is wrong and it needs to change. And so that's kind of the stuff I like to talk about. That's the stuff I like to dig into. That's the stuff that like gets me really amped up. And so I love different workflows and I love building with AI and I love learning programs and I love all different aspects of psychology and human design and all those types of things, but really span the gamut in terms of what I could talk about, I guess.
Yeah, there is already about 15 different threads. Let's start with one. It's a topic that a term that I haven't heard before, self-loyalty. What does that mean to you?
For me, it's really come from a space of a place where I've lived internally for a long time with self-abandonment. Mm. And so a lot of the internal environment and world that I lived in and ways that I operated to people please and the career choices that I made and decisions I made in terms of like what paths I chose in my career were made in a way to either please the people that were in my leadership, please the people that were important in my life at that time. And so they were made in such a way that I was abandoning the parts of myself that I either wasn't aware of or that I wasn't ready to stand up for. And so the other aspects of that is like, that's a very real and personal and like internalized format of that. But then there's a lot of systems that exist inside of our corporate world that don't really honor the people that are in them. And so they require you to abandon parts of yourself or parts of what is important to those people or what is important about those people because they lift up elements of the system or the externalized parts of the system while not necessarily supporting the people who are actually working inside that system. And so that's kind of where I like to sit in that.
That makes so much sense. And yeah, I'll be mulling over and sharing that term. Take me back, Peter, because I know that you have had somewhat of a roller coaster of the last 12 months. And I don't know if it was around 12 months ago that I know you were in a very different place to where you are now. Could you take me on that journey? Take me back to 12 months ago. What was happening and what were the kind of transition or trigger points that have brought you to where you are today?
So 12 months ago, I was a few months out of a PIP, a performance improvement plan that I had been placed on earlier in that year. It was one of the kind of the rawest moments of my life. And I was faced with a lot of choices, really. I think the hardest thing I had to confront was myself and like really look in the mirror of not just like what I wanted to do, but what the kind of like worker I wanted to be, the kind of work I wanted to do, and what's changed and what started to change and what like I had needed to confront in that moment was I needed to stop interpreting friction as personal failure. And I think that like what I realized was that like when I experienced friction, it was a signal that either something wasn't working or that something that communication needed to happen, and not that like I failed or that something else failed or something like that. And I started to confront these parts of the systems that I had built for myself internally and realized that like, one, I hadn't been building that many. I didn't really have that much built. And I also stopped trying to fit myself into boxes that weren't built for me. And so like I was trying to like expertly fit myself into these like systems or workflows or boxes and trying to like make the work that I could do fit into them or like show up inside of them and like, oh yeah, look, I can. And it was kind of like this really weird house of mirrors where it was just like, okay, if I adjust it just right, like I can kind of get what I'm doing to make it look like what they want or make it look like it, you know, goes in this box. And it's like, that's not what anybody's asking. And that's when like the light bulb started to turn on, was like the question mark, like finally disappeared. And then I asked myself the real question, was like, did anybody actually ask you to do that? Did anybody say the words or write down the question or like send you the Slack message that said like, hey, Peter, can you do this exact thing that you've been trying to do for the last like 6 months? And I'm like, no, I just interpreted something. And again, like there's a lot of things that like could be clarified, or I could have asked questions, or some people could have there's a lot of he said, she said, this, that, that's that, you know, like whatever. But like at the end of the day, like it's very clear what my job is. Like it's very clear what I'm supposed to do every day. And that's when I had the option to either take ownership of that or not take ownership of that. So I shrunk my focus. I shrunk my sphere of ownership. And I was like, all right, I'm only going to own these things because that's all anybody's asking me to own. And then until I'm so good at these things that I can do them in my sleep and that like I can literally not worry about them at all, like I'm not going to think about anything else, which is exactly the only thing anybody's asked me to do so far. And so I did that for 6 months. And then I did that for another 2 or 3 months after that, done a couple projects. And then fast forward, you know, there I was 12 months later from this PIP that I had been put on. And that year of consistency, that year of effort, that year of just like putting in this work, showing up in this effort, doing these other things, because I had become so consistent in my work. I'd become so consistent in my effort. And like over time, I had started doing other things. I had started showing up in various ways outside of just like what I was consistently asked to do every day. I led the first support AI fluency curriculum, like building curriculum for our support team, and built a 4-week AI fluency curriculum for our support team in 28 days with 4 other people on our team. This was huge. I mean, this was like, I was laughing almost through the whole thing, because it's just like a year ago, I would not have put this on the table of possibilities, of probabilities, of even just astronomical things being done. Like I would have said, like I could do this a year ago, but also like I had not shown any level of consistency in my work to be able to do that. It was one of those things where it's like, oh my, it's like I got it, but I also was like, I kind of feel like an asshole, because I was so upset. And like I felt like most of my reasons were valid, and I look back on that and I'm like, okay, some of my reasons were valid, but it's like, but also like it's kind of being an asshole. Like I was really full of like what I was like, yes, my skills are good, and they were good then, and they're still good now, but also wasn't really giving them enough credit with the fact that like, I mean, you kind of, and it was just, it's looking back on it, I just feel foolish to have had such a somewhat of a tantrum, but also like not enough communication, not enough clarity, not enough belief in their belief in me, because they had it. They had the belief in me. It was there. It showed up. And so like, it was one of those things where it's like, where I'm at now in my work and what I'm able to do now, and the relationships that have been cultivated, the professional relationship that's been cultivated, the work that we're doing, like it's incredible. Would not have happened had that belief not been there.
Incredibly powerful for people to hear. And I just want to name, like, thank you for that vulnerability. I think it shows how self-aware you are, which always makes for a better colleague or teammate, someone who is self-aware. I think you've hit on a few really key points that I would love to underline. And the first is this, like, multi-way communication. And it sounds like that was a really key part of being able to go from the PIP to where you are. I also think there is something to this is going to really resonate with generalist folk who are like, I can do absolutely everything and there's all these different things I can do. And in doing so, sometimes that's how you're going to burn yourself out. And I love that prompt of coming back to being like, hang on, nobody asked me to do this. This is just, it's a blessing and a curse of seeing a problem and just wanting to solve it. So I think that's a really important message for people to hear, that there is no trophy for being the one who burns themselves out to the point of doing everything. And I just wanted to touch on, because I'm imagining like someone listening to this might be in a similar position. They might be in a point of their work where they're like, oh, I'm really struggling and I know I can do good work here and yet I'm not doing it because of the shape, because of the communication, etc. So what would you advise them to do if they are in that situation, if they know they can do better work, they feel like they're not reaching their potential in that space? Is there anything kind of practical that you would, or prompts that you might have them start with?
Yeah, this was tough. This is really tough when you're in it, because you're either ready to hear it or you're not. And I was not. When I was really in it, I was not ready to hear. I remember I talked to one of the leaders, I talked to a senior leader who I was really close to, and he gave me amazing, solid advice, and it went in one ear and out the other. And the thing is like what I know now and what really stuck. And what really got me through those, like a couple of things got me through that, which was like the piece that you touched on before about like reminding myself of what I've actually been asked to do. And like there's a little bit of ego that we have to let go of in that, because it's like, I know what I'm great at. I know what I'm amazing at. I know what I'm really good at. And it's sometimes it's the things that we're really good at that we're not great at that we want to do a lot of, because it's, there's a bit of a dopamine kick about it. I can like rattle those things off and I'm really good at it because they come with pretty good ease. You're better than most. You're not like the best, but you're better than most. And it's a nice feeling to be really good at something that you didn't have to work very hard for. But those are sometimes, at least in these situations, those are the things that nobody's really put on your plate, that you're taking on either quietly or with a moderate amount of sound, and yet they're the ones taking up the most energy and they're the ones that are distracting you the most. And that is the kind of stuff that's like I had to let go of and be like, okay, like if I have enough energy at the end of my week, day, etc., to do those things, then I'll do them, or I'll do something like them to give myself the fulfilling feeling that I'm looking for outside of whatever this is. And then this other piece is the piece that like really, that was really the big shift, which was like, imagine that, like, I think for a lot of generalists, we tend to be people who are altruistic. We like doing things for other people. We like the idea of like building things up for somebody else. And I think that if this was, this was hard for me because I struggle a little bit with like self-affirmations. Struggle a lot of it, let's be real. And so like this was a little bit hard for me, but once I was able to like mentally get there, this completely changed how I thought about like what I did every day for my job, what I did every day like when things got a little hard, which was like, I'm doing this for a future version of myself, to build up things for a future version of myself that's going to use this to propel me to where I'm propel me towards something that I either don't know yet or to the thing I know exactly where it's taking me. And because like I love systems and I love like seeing like how these things like stack together and I love systematic like, you know, building and things like that. If I can plan it out to a point where like, oh, I know exactly how to build this and then I can see it happen, but like, oh my God, that's what I want. If I can do that and then see that happen and I'm kind of seeing that happen, it's like, ooh, this is really cool. It's like, it's happening. It's stuff like that. That's like, okay, I'm building these things up. I'm doing these things because they are literally the building blocks for this future version of myself that is waiting for me. This other person who I know I am ready for, or I want to be ready for, but like, there's a thing, they need stuff. They need like consistency. They need consistent work in this area, or they need like whatever. I mean, and the thing is like that really changed how I saw what I was doing and why I was doing what I was doing. It wasn't just like, I'm trying to satisfy this other person's demand. And that's what like shifted. It was like, it's not just satisfying a demand that somebody has on me every day to do this, because like as an autistic person, if someone puts a demand on me, there is nothing in me that ever wants to do that. Like, it's a visceral reaction. I don't want to do that. If it hits my nervous system as, I demand you, nope, I'm gone, I'm out, I'm down the road, I have, like, my soul has left my body, I am not with you. But if it is, if we're working collaboratively, if I feel like you're on my team, if I'm on your team, if we're, like, connected at the hip, if it's a three-legged race, like, I will never leave your side. And so, but that's where like my nervous system has to feel. Like I could rationally and logically understand the entire thing, but if my nervous system feels like a demand, I'm out. And it's something that happens so instinctually that it's really hard to fight. And it takes me a while to like regulate it back down to be like, hey, that's not what was happening. And so when I was able to readjust and realign the way that I thought about like why I was doing certain things in my career, it's like, this isn't just a demand on like my time, my energy, my thing. These are things I'm building up for me. These are things I'm building up for myself. These are literal like stacks of evidence, stacks of whatever that I'm building up for my career. Because if I don't build them, who will? If I don't build them, who will? Nobody else is going to put that there. I have to put it there. So like, let's go. Let's go put it in the places it needs to be put, so that when like future Peter's ready to like throw my name in the hat or put my name on the door and be like, I'm ready, dude. I've been ready, dude. And here's all the evidence that I've been stacking up in all the stores and walls and everything. Like I got a whole freaking mansion built back there. Like that's what I'm ready for.
I'm pumped. So, I am pumped, Peter. You got me going. And I want to call out how alive you just came there. And it's just phenomenal to see, because I can see this is not something that you read about in a book and you're like spouting out. You're like, this is your lived experience. I can feel that. And I know the listener will feel that too. And I think that's just so inspirational. So thank you for sharing. I would be amiss if I didn't dig into a little bit more around what this AI fluency is, because AI is obviously on everyone's mind. And at some points I feel superhuman, and other points I feel like I'm going to lose my job tomorrow and everyone's scrambling. And so you're probably one of the best people on earth to speak to about particularly specifically AI fluency. I think it's so easy to jump into the tool and play and tinker. And of course that's a strategy, but when you take a step back and you were given this project of developing this AI fluency programming, how did you think about it? What did you see that was important? What did you see that wasn't important? And well, let's start there.
Yeah, my first thoughts around building that curriculum were, I didn't want to use anything that already existed. And that's not a knock on what like what curriculum already existed as it related to AI, because that curriculum, I've gone through a lot of those curriculums. I've taken a lot of those courses and things like that, and I've tested those things out, but those had to do with using AI within a certain context of a tool, and always related using AI back to a specific tool, like whether it be ChatGPT or Claude or Gemini or something along those lines, or like as it related back to like machine learning or these like very specific tooling concepts, or like even just like AI related concepts of like where it came from, or all these and all this and that. And I think the thing that we were trying to do within the AI fluency program was very specific is at Zapier, we're using AI to build out AI orchestration workflows. And so what is that? Like, one, but two, like, how broad can an AI orchestration workflow really be? And then, like, it can really just run the gamut. So an AI orchestration workflow is literally, like, anything you can do with AI to orchestrate or to, let's put this in simple, or in more words that don't create vague meanings, using AI to connect several pieces of your data, your softwares, your tooling, without needing to check, manually link, or even like require as much human in the loop monitoring. And so if we're creating these things, if we link that back to a tool every single time, and this is what we discovered when we were building it, is that if we link that back to a tool every time, then we have to go back and update that curriculum every single time a tool updates. How many times has Claude updated in the past 6 months? How many times has ChatGPT updated it? Like, it would be unreal. And so for a support team inside of a company that's already, like, you know, dealing with all of the apps that Zapier supports, that's really hard. And so, like, we're creating a curriculum that we're trying to use to help upskill a team in their AI fluency. So it's relating it back to, okay, well, what about how we use AI as opposed to just the tools we use it within? And so that seemed like a much more like evergreen way to go about building out this fluency curriculum. And it also allowed us to adapt it to different tooling and things like that. But it also meant that we were building everything from scratch. We could lean on some of the concepts and some of the, you know, things when it came to like prompting and different, you know, things that we had learned and pulled from various curriculums or various things that had been pre-built in different areas. But for the most part, everything was hand-built from everybody in the team.
It kind of mirrors for me how I see the evolution of skills and learning evolving as well. So, for example, instead of this really deep focus on, okay, we must learn this one particular skill and hone the skill, it's about this meta learning and like, how do we learn how to learn? How do we build these continuous feedback loops of how to learn? And my sense is this is kind of, it mirrors what you're saying, where it's not necessarily, this is how to use the exact tool and Zapier in this exact specific way, but it's how do you learn how to use this technology that is consistently, as you said, by the time we finish this episode, it would have changed again. Like, that is how fast we are talking.
Yeah. When I was leading this team and I was thinking about, like, okay, when you think about the term fluency, like, I don't know, I'm a very literal thinker. And so I'm thinking, okay, well, if I'm fluent in a language, I never finish learning that language. Like, never really finished learning. Like, I learn things about English all the time, but also English is all, like, it's a forever developing language. Like, every language is forever developing or ever growing, ever evolving. And so if we never finish learning it, if it never finishes developing or never finishes evolving, then fluency as it pertains to AI is what we're teaching people, is not how to, what to know about this topic. It's how to know how to learn this topic, is a confidence in their ability to know this topic. I'm teaching them AI confidence, not how to know AI, or when will they feel confident enough to learn this, to chase after this on their own. And so that was what I figured out after we had built a curriculum, after everybody started going through the curriculum, and then people started asking us questions about the curriculum and coming back to us with basically saying, like, I'm not confident in my answers. Can you check my answers? And I was like, yep, nope. Mm-hmm. Yep. I was like, that's what we didn't do. We did not instill confidence, because somebody else from Generalist World, Shern, said this beautiful thing in one of the Slack threads when talking about, like, teaching from a deficit model, and it just light bulbed. I was like, oh my gosh, that's what we did. We taught from a deficit model.
Wait, explain this. What do you mean by deficit model?
So teaching from a deficit model is in a sense, like, I have all the answers and I'm going to give them to you. I have all the knowledge and I'm going to give them to you. So I'm going to, and you don't have any of the answers or the knowledge. So your bucket's empty. My bucket's full. I'm going to empty my bucket into your bucket. So you have the knowledge. But in reality, what we need to teach them to do is teach them how to find the water themselves and fill their own bucket, not pour my water into their bucket. Because then I, at the end of the day, have to go fill my bucket because, like, I am completely spent filling theirs, which makes it incredibly difficult to consistently give confidence to people when they're always looking for someone to give them more confidence. Because at a certain point, and this isn't something that was said in the Slack there, but this is just something that I'm kind of riffing off of, is just that, like, eventually people are going to lose confidence in the people who are giving them confidence, and they're going to find out the teachers. And so we either find people who can give us false confidence, and then we find bad teachers, or we just forever stay in this state of, I don't have confidence in what I know, and we never fully believe in what we know or what we've learned, and we're forever walking around with an empty bucket, but never realize that that bucket is actually full.
Oof, I love it. It's a huge idea, but it makes total sense. And I love these collisions that happen inside community, where Shern, who's on the other side of the world, who is a professor with his PhD that I can still not pronounce, plants the seed that then you can reference. It's just, it's my favorite thing. It makes me so happy. Peter, you have so many interesting takes, and I would just love to know, where do you see the world going from your perspective? Do you have any predictions for the upcoming year or perhaps beyond?
I'm going to keep my predictions more focused on AI fluency. There's a lot of other things that are going on in the world that are very dark and depressing right now. And I can only hope for something peaceful and better to wash over this world. But within the realm of AI and within the realm of tech and the things that I've seen on that landscape, one of the things that I feel like is going to change in the next 12 months, or we're going to see happen over the next 12 months, is that AI fluency is going to fail wherever it's treated as a tooling problem instead of a human orientation problem. And so over the next year, we're going to see which organizations understand that AI amplifies existing patterns. And so if your culture is built on control and extraction, AI will surface that faster and will surface the brittle parts of your culture faster. And if it's built on trust and clarity, it will We'll see how AI can deepen that. Training programs will still keep showing up, but the differentiator won't be the prompts or the templates. It's going to be discernment and knowing what to trust and how to verify where the boundaries are and how to stay responsible without becoming brittle. And I think the people who will lead this aren't really the loudest or the flashiest in AI right now. They're the ones who are designing that stability from the chaos, doing it quietly, relationally, and with integrity. AI is an amplifier. It's not the redeemer of business right now.
Mm. Fantastic take. Is there anything that I haven't asked you and you're like, Millie, I want to speak to this while I've got the microphone, while these listeners are tuned in? Is there anything else that you would like to open floor?
I talked about self-abandonment, and I talked about building from self-loyalty. And so, like, talking about, like, what happens when systems stop asking people to abandon themselves in order to be productive. And a lot of what I built during that time, like, throughout the PIP, and what helped me, like, really transition through that was I started building these, like, reflection bots. Like, these, like, bots or chatbots or agents that I built through my work at Zapier. And I built out these audit logs and AI workspaces and different things, because they started out as survival scaffolding. These were things that I reached for because they helped me cope. They helped me externalize the ambiguity. And so it was how I stay grounded without performing my way through the burnout. And then what I kind of knew on some level, but knew I didn't have the energy to engage with, was that I knew that this could potentially help somebody else, maybe, but I wasn't ready to share it, or didn't feel comfortable or confident enough to share it. And then when I did, I watched those same structures become useful for teams, for my team, for my colleagues, not as like productivity hacks, but as ways to make work clearer and safer and more honest. And so I think that, like, AI makes this kind of conversation unavoidable, because it like replaces any like human interaction or human emotions or anything like that, but because it really forces us to decide what kind of humans our systems are built for. And that, like, the future of work isn't necessarily AI first. It's human systems that finally honor our nervous system and judgment and truth, and with AI as a collaborator in reflection, not as a substitute for it. And so, like, that's a lot of what I'm focused on now when I think about how I integrate AI into what I do, how I do what I do, how I use AI, even when I'm, like, debugging code. It's my reflector and collaborator, not like a replacement for how I'm functioning, because I'm learning as I'm doing it rather than as something that replaces it for me.
Yeah, it's a really important distinction. And I think you've shared a little bit that these bots and these agents kind of serve as this reflection tool, and that's really helped not just yourself but others. And I think there's a real lesson in there that if you're able to build things that are genuinely helping you, there's a pretty good chance they're going to help someone else as well. It's a pretty good litmus test. Peter, this episode has been incredible. I feel really energized from it and also really inspired, and I just want to call out and thank you for your deep honesty and vulnerability and humility. I think this is really going to help a lot of people. So thank you.
It's been a lot of fun. I love talking through all these kinds of things. So it's very enjoyable.
Awesome. Well, we will link all of your links in the show notes, and folks can get in touch directly if they have extra questions or insights to chat. Thanks so much, Peter.
Thank you.